Welcome to Haldane's Law Matters, and thank you. Today we're very pleased to have as our guest Jendrik Klub, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. It's not too easy for me. And I know that, Jendrik, you came to Hong Kong as Executive Director of Operations at the Hong Kong Competition Commission, and you were responsible for antitrust enforcement. Would that be correct?
That is correct. The formal title was operations, but in fact, it was enforcement. It took me a while to understand.
And I think for about a decade before you came to Hong Kong, you were at the European Commission's as a Director General for Competition.
I was at the Directorate General for Competition. I was not the Director General. That is still something that may be ahead of.
Have I promoted you? Anyway, listen, before we, if we may, talk about the transition, because it's always interesting when people come from a very different jurisdiction to that of Hong Kong. Can I just ask you if you could explain to me, and not so much to Felix, I suspect, who's with me, and I should introduce him immediately as one of my partners, who will participate in this discussion. Can you explain to listeners that may not be very familiar with the idea of competition and trust law, what it really amounts to? How does it work?
Very, very happy to, Jonathan. Before I do that, let me just say thank you, to Haldane's, to Felix, to Justin for the invitation to speak to you on this podcast. It's a pleasure to be talking to you, and I'm grateful for the invitation. Now going into what is the purpose of antitrust laws. You know, I've taught a competition law course for the last 11 years. So this is something I do explain at the beginning of each semester. So I will give you the spiel that I give to my students. And, you know, the purpose of antitrust laws is to protect the process of competition between firms on the market. In an open market economy, this process is essential for the efficient allocation of resources, for delivering choice to consumers, for driving low prices and spurring innovation. Antitrust laws use three tools to protect competition. One, they prohibit any agreements that restrict competition between firms, for example, the fixing of prices or allocating customers amongst themselves. The second tool they use is the prohibition of abusive conduct by dominant firms, by monopolies, if you will. For example, tying of their different products together so as to expand their dominance from one market to another. Finally, and this tool is absent from the Hong Kong regime, and we'll probably talk about that, antitrust laws use the control of mergers and acquisitions to make sure that dominant firms' monopolies are not created as a result of mergers and acquisitions. As to how effective the laws are in protecting the competitive process, well, that really depends on how they are written and how they're enforced. Antitrust laws are now on the books in more than 140 jurisdictions. This is a sea change compared with 30 years ago, when the number of jurisdictions was less than 50. Not all of the laws and not all of the regimes are effective, either because there are flaws in the law's formulation, deficiencies in the enforcement process, lack of resources or experience at the enforcement agency level, the judiciary, and so on. Hong Kong is comparatively in a very good place. You know, its competition in ordinance is not a perfect piece of legislation, but it does not have any major problems, flaws, exceptions that would hamper its effective application. Leaving aside the absence of merger control, because this is one big gaping hole in the Hong Kong enforcement or competition regime, there is really no flaw or problem in the ordinance. And so I would say the ordinance is a very good piece of legislation. So that addresses one prerequisite for having an effective competition regime. Good law. Hong Kong has that. Second issue, how it is enforced. Well, its enforcement agencies, the commission, the communications authority, are well-resourced and have qualified staff. So that box is also importantly, and this is something I do mention when I speak about this, Hong Kong is a sophisticated jurisdiction with a well-functioning judiciary and a robust legal profession. And this is essential for the application of enforcement of the ordinance. You know, Felix appears before the commission, and his expertise, his qualifications are essential for the success of the regime as a whole. And the regime is of prosecutorial nature. meaning that the commission, in order to impose penalties on companies that fix prices and so on, has to bring an action before the competition tribunal. And without having good solicitors that help the commission, without having good barristers that represent the commission before the tribunal, and barristers who represent the other parties before the tribunal, the commission could not do much, no matter how hard it tries. An important piece in this whole picture is the competition tribunal and the judiciary itself. In this respect, the commission and Hong Kong is very lucky. I have been uniformly impressed by the quality of the legal profession in Hong Kong, by the judiciary, and the judgments of the tribunal to date are of very high quality internationally. And I am well aware of other jurisdictions in the common law world looking to Hong Kong's judgments now when they interpret their own competition laws. And so this is something I would say is a long way of answering what is competition law, how effective is it in achieving its objective, and where does Hong Kong stand in this picture?
That's good to hear. It's good to hear that you're impressed with Hong Kong and that it stands well in world terms. I was going to ask you, and perhaps you've answered already effectively, how do we stack up versus the European experience you've had? And it sounds to me as if the answer to that is we do pretty well.
Hong Kong, I have to say now you, because you know I'm getting used to saying we now as Europeans, stack up really well, especially considering that Hong Kong has had competition laws for now 10 years, while the European Union has had competition law on the books for 60 years.
We're newcomers, but we're
way
doing
behind, even in Asian countries. I heard, as far as I know, even in mainland China, is it 2010, Singapore 2008 or something. And Korea and Japan, when I talk to Japanese and Korean lawyers on antitrust issues, I feel very inadequate because they are telling me a lot of cases and issues, and then I told them effectively, oh, I'm sorry, because we are still quite a new jurisdiction. So I think that's something we need to bear in mind. And I think that goes to Jonathan's question, and maybe my question is there anything we can do better in the jurisdiction? We heard that you mentioned one thing that we have not done, which is the merger control. Is this something we should work on?
So merger control, you know, is one of the three tools or the legs of a stool on which competition enforcement stands. If the stool has only two legs, it's a very unstable stool. So, you know, this is something that I believe Hong Kong will need to address in due course. The omission of cross-sector merger control in Hong Kong is a deliberate choice by the government. In my understanding, you know, there is a gradualist argument that motivated that omission, and which is, well, competition laws are complex enough. The agency should learn first to deal with the simpler areas of competition enforcement, the behavioral investigations, the price fixing, the market sharing, the abuse investigations. That is not to say that they're easy, but the argument is, well, first learn to run, and then you may learn to you get a bike, to ride a bike. I do believe the time has come for the commission to be given cross-sector merger review powers and for the government to seriously consider amending the ordinance in this respect. It is not an easy, you know, amendment to make or a design to settle on, because there are nuances to consider. Merger review regimes are of different nature around the world. For example, in the EU, we have a mandatory notification regime where mergers, if they hit certain turnover thresholds, have to be notified to the commission before they are implemented, so the commission can review them and approve them or prohibit them or require commitments to modify them. United Kingdom, on the other hand, has a system of voluntary notifications. So Hong Kong will have to consider this, but at least the debate should begin.
Can I ask this? Is our reluctance to perhaps fill that gaping hole, as you'd described it, something to do with concern about it interfering with economic and technological development? Is that where the resistance comes in?
I do believe that is where some of the arguments may have come from. I do not believe that those are arguments that are well founded. I, you know, competition regulation is a word or that suggests, or a combination of word that suggests some restriction to the freedom of business conduct, and by extension, a restriction of sort of economic development or ability to innovate, engage in market behavior that is beneficial. Competition laws, as I said, are there to protect the workings of a market economy in which the competitive process is essential. If companies, you know, are allowed to buy one another and become dominant in the process or monopolistic in the process, they are given the power to then exclude new entrants into the market, to prevent the emergence of new products, to reduce innovation. And I do believe that experience around the world shows that competitive economies are generally better at delivering better economic outcomes, more innovation, lower prices, greater choice for the benefit of consumers and businesses alike.
Who actually normally is the complainant? Who brings cases before the courts here?
So in Hong Kong, the only body that can bring complaints before the court is the Hong Kong Competition Commission. There's no standalone right of action by a private person to bring an action for violation of the conduct rules in the ordinance. It is only the commission who has that jurisdiction. This is different from, again, the European Union. There, it is also private persons, businesses, who can bring an action before courts for violation of competition laws. Hong Kong has made the choice that it should be only the commission who brings those actions. I do believe that that is a reasonable choice to make, but that is something that has consequences. For example, if anti-competitive conduct is not addressed by the commission because, you know, it does not have infinite resources, then it will go unaddressed. Then the victims of that anti-competitive conduct have no redress whatsoever.
So it's, the commission acts as a filter effectively, because presumably it receives complaints, decides whether it's worth taking to the courts, and goes one way or the other.
That is absolutely correct. And it receives a vast number of complaints. You know, it, I don't recall the statistics, but when I left, I think the commission has received over 3,500 complaints.
Right.
And it has to sift, as you say, it's a filter. It has to sift through all of that. It has to prioritize. It has to choose the conduct that it spends the resources in investigating and prosecuting before the tribunal. And it is a lengthy and resource-intensive process. And it has to make that choice well in order to make the regime effective, because, you know, it cannot attend to all, but it has to be deliberate in ensuring general deterrence to make sure the regime is efficient, even in the absence of the ability to tackle all the competition issues. So this is something that the commission, you know, and thank you for asking about it, because this is often overlooked in how important the commission and its case selection is in ensuring the effectiveness of the Hong Kong regime.
Well, you may know that Haldane's, largely through, in fact, the endeavors of Felix Ng, who is with us, as you know, today and asking questions, and who I think you come across professionally from time to time, took the decision that this was going to be an important part of the law of Hong Kong. And so we were at the forefront of making sure that we were able to participate in the development of the law. So it might be that, Felix, we can push a little bit to get some of
Yeah, I think
these
one
issues
thing I
addressed.
find it very amazing about a commission is that although it's the regulator is in a way passive receiving complaints, but one thing it has done very well that is the policy, especially regarding leniency and cooperation and settlement, because that encourages whistleblowers to come forward to the commission and say, "Oh, something has happened. So, commission, I would like to lodge a complaint, but I would like to get immunity. So, I would like to tell you the full story." So, I think that, from my perspective, has given rise to quite a lot of effective complaints to the commission to start an effective investigation. I think that maybe from your perspective as well could be very effective in enforcement, because I think in comparison to other enforcement agency, I think there's something quite new.
Felix, that is, you know, and yes, you know, your role in that whole process is essential, and why I will get to that, because to come in and self-report and you know, take the decision to approach the commission, that's a very consequential decision for a company to make. So that is something where you play an extremely important role. You know, going back to, I think, your point about Hong Kong being a latecomer, there is a silver lining to it. Mm-hmm. And the silver lining is that Hong Kong can benefit and did benefit from the wealth of experience accumulated by competition agencies in other jurisdictions. It doesn't have to reinvent the wheel.
Mm.
You know, not because it can simply take over the European policies and just copy paste them and make them Hong Kong policies, but the body of policy work and experience in different jurisdictions provides a very good template that can be tailored to the Hong Kong specificities, to the specificities of the business culture, of the industrial structure, of the enforcement framework. And this is something that, you know, could not have been put in place back in 2013 when the law was passed, or 2015 when the commission, you know, started enforcing the law. For that, the commission had to accumulate some experience. But with that experience, it has done very well. It has adopted a range of enforcement policies, starting from the leniency policy, which, you know, allows companies that participate in cartel conduct, price fixing, market sharing, and so on, to go and self-report to the commission in exchange for full immunity from any sanctions. And, you know, the policy as it stands now is an example for other jurisdictions, because it addresses some of the main disincentives for why companies are reluctant to come in and self-report. You know, the primary one being now that they expose themselves to follow-on damage actions.
Yes.
You know, so they better sit still. Why would I go and self-report if at the end of it I save some money in fines, but then I will be exposed to large damage actions with exposure often dwarfing the potential fine that could have been levied? You mentioned also operation policy. Yeah, sorry.
No, when we were talking, it struck me, Jondrik, that we never mentioned the United States. Do they have the same? Do they have a policy?
Sherman Act, right? That's all I know.
So, you know, the United States is the modern sort of source of all competition law, the Sherman Act.
Yes, but I'm right.
I knew you would be, Felix.
give you a good grade. You know, but when it comes to leniency policy, for example, that has, again, its origin in the United States. In, I think, 1994, the US DOJ came out with its revision of a leniency policy, drawing on, and I think this is where, you know, your firm is particularly well positioned to understand how it works and its importance. It draws from the experience of prosecuting conspiracies. Mm. Cartel is a conspiracy, effectively. And how does one get evidence of something that is illegal, usually covert? Well, it is through cooperation of a conspiracy participant.
But when we started to become interested in this new law, as it was new not long ago, really, it occurred to us that it did actually fit quite well into what we hope are our other expertise. At least we hope they are expertise. So we've it's been an interesting journey for you so far, Felix. Yes.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, I think so. For myself, and I'm sure for Yingtrich as well. For me, because Yingtrich is a regulator, and yes, also he's now back in Europe, back in Brussels. Of course, we'd like to know something more about your journey. My journey is more, in a way, more generic, doing cases, yes, SFC, Competition Commission, and other regulators. But for you, I think it's more of an international and exciting journey.
Correct. And for our listeners, of course, they won't know that you are actually speaking to us from Brussels.
Yes.
This is a first for Haldane's Law Matters, because normally people are in the office, but it's very nice to have you here digitally. It's very modern.
I'm honored to be the first, although I do look forward to seeing you in person again.
Good. Well, I think we don't have time to hear your whole story today, but we're quite keen on these occasions to invite guests back for another chapter. And I'd like to thank you very much indeed for all you've talked about today and explained in terms of antitrust and competition law. A lot of people, I think, will be interested to hear what you had to say, because it's not one of those things that everyone understands.
Thank you. I think one last question like to put to Ingrid has been around different parts of the world. And also we noticed that from the screen, we saw the words Hong Kong behind his seat. So I suppose it's a very important part of his journey. So is there any plans for you to come back to Asia or any parts of, say, Asia or Hong Kong, other parts of the world, to do antitrust competition?
Well, you know, me coming to Hong Kong was somewhat of an accident, I have to say, but an extremely lucky one. I did not plan on it. I was approached by Headhunter, and that's how I ended up there in 2017. And Hong Kong has been, you know, extremely welcoming to me, extremely generous, and I couldn't have imagined a better place to land at. The job that I was given was an honor of a lifetime and an exciting time to be there at the start of enforcement for the commission. And so I always will think very fondly of that period in my life. I do miss Hong Kong. I miss its people, the friends I made, the pace of life in the city. You know, Brussels is a lot slower. The beauty of its country parks, the islands. So I will always be pulled back and will continue to visit. I don't know if you know that, but my younger daughter was born in Hong Kong at the start of the pandemic. So I think there are many, many reasons for me to come back. But professionally, I'm now in Europe and I'm leading, you know, my firm's European antitrust team. And I'm fully focused on raising our practice to new levels. And there's plenty to keep me busy in Europe with the Digital Markets Act, sustainability transition, and so on. So I, at the moment, have no immediate plans to return to Asia to do antitrust. But in my life, I learned to never say never. So who knows?
That's a very good note to end on. Again, thank you very much, Jean-Drew, for joining us all the way from Brussels. And we look forward to you at least visiting, even if you don't take up a career at this end of the world again. Thank you again.
Thank you very much for having me, Jonathan. Thank you, Felix.
Hope to see you soon.
See you soon, hopefully.
Take care.
Take care.